Some of you are probably hoping that I can keep my homily as brief as that first reading, only two verses. If I could compact that kind of a message into two sentences and end it, I would, because it's a powerful message that, you know, the people of Zion are, well, they're rebelling, they're complaining, they're feeling very much abandoned by God. You know, has God forsaken us? And then God responds, you know, even if a mother would forget her infant, I will not forget you. We know that that doesn't happen. And you notice it doesn't say fathers forgetting their infants, but and if a mother forgets her infant, it makes, you know, headlines because it just never happens. And so how much more God will not forget us. That it's easy to say, you know, that's a comforting message, but that doesn't necessarily take you out of the what appears to be a forsakenness, that things are not going well. Whether, you know, it's supplying for the basic needs, whether it's a matter of one's reputation, whether it's a matter of one's family life, whether it's a matter of one's health, you know, everything could be going south. You might still be in that forsaken place. The fact that God cares for us and he is not forgetting us and he's providing for us doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to be taken out of the sorrow and the suffering. I think that's important to remember. When we say we're trusting in God, yes, we hope that he will deliver us out of the dismal, abysmal state, but maybe he won't. But what we know is he'll be with us in it, and he'll see us through it. And this segues beautifully into the gospel. Jesus, five or six times says, don't worry. Why would you worry? Look at how everything else is provided for in life. Look at the flowers of the field. You know, in the morning, they sprout up. They're beautiful. And by evening, they wither and fade. And so even Solomon wasn't as decorated as the flowers of the field. So why are you worrying? Why are you worrying about what you eat? Why are you worrying about your clothes? You're going to be provided for. So Jesus is giving a somewhat similar message, because the people in the Old Testament, when they're crying out, they're worrying because things are not going well. They're feeling abandoned. When you feel like you're abandoned, that means that life is going south in some way, right? And so those people are full of worry. And Jesus is addressing that same human experience, that he's finding in the disciples, the people who are listening to him after for the first time or after a number of times. So, yeah, that sounds like a great message. It sounds like really good news that we could live a life without worry. I mean, everybody would be in on that one. But here's the thing: we do not find a life without worry by trying not to worry. So I can't just sit, okay, I'm not going to worry. I'm not going to worry. Well, you're just going to end up worrying more if you're trying to fight not worrying. So how do we find ourselves in a life without worry, that what Jesus is describing, that beautiful passage in the gospel? Well, the first verse gives us a hint, because the first two verses that we hear is that Jesus says you can't serve both God and mammon. You'll either love one or hate the other. And then right at the end of the passage, he says that seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and everything else will be given to you. So it really comes down to a matter of who is our master? Who is the most important? Who is most important in our life? Is God number one? Is he truly number one? To the degree that he is number one, our worries and fears will diminish. So there is, you know, when it comes to the everything in life, everything is kind of evaluated. Our school just went through an accreditation process, so that we had several days that a group came in to assess every part of our school, and they've been preparing for it for some time. You know, you think about your jobs. We're assessed everywhere. When it comes to the spiritual life, you're like, I don't know where I'm sitting at with God. How well am I doing? How well am I living out my faith? One way that you can get an indication of how well you are doing as far as putting God first and really having God as your only master is to consider the amount of worry that you have in your life. There's a strict correlation between the amount that we worry, and how we're putting, where we're putting God in our life. As I was saying, to the degree that we truly have God first, we will not have worry. That's why 1 John says, if you have fear, you have not yet perfect love of God. So, okay, well, it sounds like a great message, but now we kind of open it up like that. It doesn't sound, we're not maybe in as good of a position as we had hoped to be. But that's going to be the challenge of our entire life, is putting God, truly putting God first. And putting God first means living a life of radical faith and hope. Faith is God's presence, God's activity in the moment, here and right now. And I'm living in that way, so that I'm accepting all the circumstances that are surrounding me in this moment. That God is here, the good and the bad. And I'm exercising discernment in the midst of that. And then hope is about recognizing that God will be there and present in the future. So Pope Benedict XVI said that hope, the definition of hope really is faith in the future. And so living, that's what it means to really put God first, that having God as our master, that we are living with true faith in the present moment, and we are living with hope in the future. And to the degree that we're doing that, we are not, there's no way we're not going to have worry. It's not going to exist. And so it's a big challenge, but it's a great promise, and it's a promise of, you know, that it's certainly good news. What it's going to mean is that we're going to have to be probably tougher in our life of faith and hope than we would maybe be comfortable with or normally understand. It takes a radical kind of faith to rise above our worries and our fears. We are very fragile in our fallenness. St. John of Avila, he's a doctor of the church, and he speaks on this matter. He says, at times we even have to do violence to ourselves. That's kind of like, whoa, violence to oneself? Well, you know, when it comes to really having that kind of radical faith and going beyond this sense of, you know, living as if one's been abandoned by God, you kind of do have to, you know, do violence to yourself. You kind of have to deny everything that you're feeling, the way that things are perceived to be, because we want to fall into. Our tendency, our default is to fall into a state where, you know, we're the victim. And so the challenge of having this radical type of faith that pushes us, boosts us through that space of worry and fear so that we can live in the peace of the Lord. I want to share with you, to conclude, a passage from Father Jacques Philippe, who came here this last year. Oh, my book's not here. Let me see. It is here. You're all happy now. Okay. But he speaks about everything that Christ went through and how he was really able to live and maintain peace in the midst of it all. He said, Jesus was surrounded by a sea of evil. I love that. A sea of evil. That's quite a bit. Hatred, violence, and lies. His heart was broken and pierced, and he suffered more than anyone has ever suffered. But the wrong done to him did not penetrate him. He didn't worry, because his heart was full of trust in his Father. My friends, we can do the same thing, because Christ's Spirit dwells within us.